Welcome everyone to a new Gornation podcast. I'm super stoked to have this episode together with the two streetlifting legends, Pere and Baki, duo that I wanted to interview for a long, long time because they both come from a similar background of doing reps and statics at the same time.
I'm sitting here with one of the two, is Pere, who just became European champion this weekend. So I'm super happy to have you physically here.
Thank you.
We will soon jump into the interview together with Baki. Also, it's Sunday of the Black Weekend currently, and we have the huge discounts, the biggest discounts of the year running in the shop, may it be for dip bars, for static bars, for wrist wraps, for chalk, for clothing. Everything is discounted in the shop only until Tuesday morning, so grab your pieces now, and now let's jump into the episode.
Let's go.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Calisthenics Insider Podcast by Gornation. My name is Phil, and today we have two super crazy strong athletes, two streetlifting athletes, two streetlifting champions from France, from Spain. I'm super happy to start this episode, and we have a special episode because it's the combination of statics and streetlifting. We have the you two are not only super strong in all the streetlifting exercise, but you also have a big background in static strength. So yeah, welcome Pere, welcome Baki to the podcast.
Hi.
Hey.
So yeah, I'm going to start presenting myself. So my name is Pere, I'm from Spain. I'm 25 years old and I started calisthenics around 11 years ago. And I started with weighted calisthenics or street lifting around 5 to 6 years ago. And yeah, I'm currently only training for weighted calisthenics and street lifting and focused on competing. And yeah, and that would be about myself.
So my name is Dylan, but I'm known as Baki. I started calisthenics, 13 years ago. Something like that, with certain reps, some statics, and then weighted. I'm a two-time world champion and last year vice champion. And yeah, I'm 28 years old. Yeah, very sad. 28 years old. Yeah, that's it.
Nice. And you are currently in two different phases of your career. Pere, you have the competition this weekend.
Yep.
So at the date of the recording, I think it's 4 days now that you will stand on the stage and perform. And Baki, you took a year off. You took some rest to come back stronger. And yeah, I'm super looking forward to dive into this. We see in the street lifting in general right now a lot of focus on the squats and a lot of points being collected there. And it's something that I want to discuss with you, because you two are like, let's say, upper body monsters. You have insane numbers on the upper body, because this is where your background comes from the reps, from the statics. Of course, doesn't mean that your squat is super bad, but still, like, your focus has always been on this. Yeah, maybe Baki, you want to directly dive in. Tell us more. You started with reps, you started with some statics. How did you transition to street lifting?
It was just normal. I mean, when you become stronger after that, you want to add more weight, add more challenge. So it was for us just a normal path to add some weight and play with different modalities.
But still, you saw that the sport developed a lot towards these super heavyweights, street lifting. When I remember in 2014, 15, it was still that there were like a lot of competitions, weighted calisthenics competitions with 32 kg pull-ups, 48 kg dips. This was weighted calisthenics back in the days. And today it's like one rep max, almost like powerlifting. When did this transition take place?
I think it's because of the oral bars, no?
Yeah, maybe around 2017, 18.
Yeah, 16 even. Yeah.
I was not there at the 16, I think it was 17, my first all bars.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they were the first who said, hey, let's go for one rep max. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I remember a guy doing 120 kilograms dip.
It was crazy back then.
It was like, wow, it's going on, you know?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. For me, it's like the craziest thing is how the numbers developed. Yeah, I remember Tonio, the founder organizer of Final Rep, he was like always taking part in the German nationals, and he had the goal of unlocking the 100 kg dip, and in Germany it was like, oh, like 100 kg dips, yeah. And today, like, they are fighting over the 200 kg dip, which like doubled in, let's say, what is it, 10 years, 8-9 years, crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely crazy.
But it's also because of something else that the number are increasing that much.
What is it?
The equipment.
The equipment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you have the battle of the strength, you have the athlete becoming better, but you're also the equipment becoming, I don't know if I can say better or too much yeah. for the athlete, just helping like a gear, like a.
Yeah, you're referring to sleeves, for example, right?
For example, like the elbow sleeves, yeah.
So yeah, not only the deep stations are getting better and maybe the plates and the belts and everything are getting better, but also the fact that we started to include the elbow sleeves for the dips and the sleeves are getting every time like stiffer and stronger. They provide obviously more help.
Yeah. I was just in Spain with Marlin, who also competed for fun in a dip challenge at the FIBO where you also took part, Baki. And like everyone was asking her, do you have sleeves, you know? And she said, yes, I have sleeves, the one from Gornation, yeah? And she put on the sleeves, and our sleeves, you know, they are meant for compression, for some warmth, you know, but they are not the thick neoprene sleeves that you use for a street lifting competition. Every street lifter was like, what, this is not a sleeve, you know? But it's crazy how stiff they are.
Yeah, because I don't know where the limit will be, but for example, we all started with the typical SPD sleeves, which is like soft neoprene, which helps, but maybe, I don't know, maybe 5 kilograms more at max.
But, you know, still now, very, very tight. Huh? Even the SPD one are really, really tight.
Depending on the size, I mean, it's not that crazy, right? I don't know, like I've tried the ones I wear, the full stiff ones. These are a lot. So I don't know where that line will be drawn, but through lifting, it's kind of show. So I guess they will not limit that because maybe power lifting, it's more like there's no music, there's no fire, there's no smoke, you know. In through lifting, you see the music, you see the fire when someone hits a PR, the smoke. It's more like a show. So I don't think they will limit that maybe. I don't know. That's my guess. But
so you see through lifting as a show and not really as a sport like power lifting?
No. I mean, it's still a strength sport, but it's more like show. For example, in powerlifting, you have other federations like WRPF, I think it's called, and they have fire, music, and, you know, it's more show. Maybe the IPF, for example, it's more strict. Everyone, it's quiet, you know, so it's different type of approach of competition. So
this is interesting because now Final Rep just brought the anti-doping system. And I think the powerlifting that you are talking about don't have this anti-doping system because it's a full show, so they just want to increase the numbers.
Exactly.
So
maybe it's a mix between, you know, they are tested, but still we want to have like a show so people, it's more easy for them to watch. Because otherwise it's very boring if there's no music, there's no nothing, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, so it's this development of the sport that probably you think a lot of. I know, Baki, we've been shooting together the last week, and we've been talking about this a lot. Because, where does the sport develop? Where will streetlifting be in 5 years? What do you think, Pierre?
I think that more strict regarding rules. For example, already this year, the rules and the judges in the competitions were way more strict than the previous year, which is something very positive, that the rules are very clear and that everyone has the same judging, you know, while competing. That's something very important. So I think this will even be better in the long term. But regarding changes in equipment or rules or whatever, I don't think it's going to change much from now. I mean, I don't know. I hope they don't add even crazier sleeves, you know, or crazier stuff like equipped powerlifting. I think we are in a good spot now. So, yeah.
Do you think, Baki, we're in a good spot now?
Me, I think, to be honest, we are not in a good spot now. I think the equipment are too much for now, especially the elbow sleeves. I have the feeling that it's just like a run, you know, at who will. We'll put the best sleeves, the stiffest sleeves and increase the numbers like that. So if it's just a show, okay, why not? But if this is really a sport and you want to see who's the strongest, I think we have to know the limits of the equipment and all this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, but also, for example, for squat, I mean, do you agree that we can wear sleeves for the squat, for example?
If it was just me, to be honest, I would love to be raw for everything.
Like the,
for everything.
It was the competition in Belgium, maybe?
No, it was the, I don't know about Belgium, but I did one competition with Ludo back then.
Yeah.
What, the Adam Row something?
Yeah.
It was amazing. It was full row. Yeah. I mean, I like this type of competition. Because if you want to demonstrate a real strength, and this is the purpose of the sport, and this is where I come from, street lifting, like street lifting. It was first of all in the streets and with just the park and the bars. This is what you should do, I think. Or maybe the sports need to change the names. Yes, names.
I don't know. But for example, I would guess that 95% of people now trains in gyms. So for me, the name, it has no sense, because when I tell people, hey, I do street lifting, they're like, bro, you're all the day in the gym with the plates and the machines and what the fuck, you know?
I agree.
But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's sad, but also it's safer to wear sleeves, for example, in the squat, maybe. And for me, maybe it makes sense that if it's safe for the squat, I mean, it's same kind of articulation for the arms. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it should be worn or not. Also, you have to think about the sponsors of the competitions. If there's no equipment, there's no sponsors willing to pay the competitions to let their equipment be used. So I think it's also strategic in this part to be, you know, to be able to wear sleeves and belts and stuff, you know. So yeah, I don't think this is going to change, sadly.
Yeah. But what do you think? You're fine with it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine. If everybody can wear the same thing, I mean, as long as we don't go too far, like wraps and crazy things like equip powerlifting, I think it's fine. You know, as long as they say, I don't know, the sleeves, it's neoprene, 7 millimeters, and you know, and it's fine. Or they get approved by the competition. I think it's good, but I wouldn't like it to go even farther than this, you know? I think it's fine right now. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, they help, for example, the sleeves. Maybe they give me 10 kilos, 12 kilos more, but it's not like they give you 50 kilos. Like, I don't know, equip powerlifting that they get 50, 60, 70 kilos more with the wraps and everything. So it helps, obviously, but it also makes it safer and more stable and everything. So, yeah.
It's already crazy that equipment can give you like 10 to 15 kg more than what you can usually have.
Yeah. Like, it's maybe like 7%.
It's crazy.
7% increase in performance. If you think about it, which is not that crazy, it's just a 7%. But
I
don't know.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Of course, it's a lot. It's maybe like a year of work. I know. You also need to get used to it and everything.
Because it's also about what you like, the knowledge that you give, like the example for the. I'm not old, but for the old generation, me back then, I was looking at people very raw, like with this kind of mentality and this aesthetic. And now you're just seeing everyone wearing this sleeve, this, you know, having the best, the new very stiff elbow sleeve, the new inser very stiff knee sleeves. And I don't know, me, I'm not really comfortable with that, but it's fine, because if I want to compete next year, for example, I will obviously use it, because I have to if I want to win. But I'm not really comfortable with that, with this way of competing and seeing the sports in general.
Yeah, I understand. It's a little bit like pay to win, like tiny win.
Yeah. It's like Fortnite, but having the best skin.
But I mean, I don't know. It is what it is. I mean, in powerlifting, you also need to buy a belt. You need to buy the knee sleeves. You need to buy the shoes. You need to buy everything. So, I mean, they need to get money from somewhere.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting perspectives, because you two come from a different background than maybe a lot of different athletes that are competing nowadays, because they just know this, like this niche, or they orient themselves in street lifting and powerlifting. But you two are like, really, you are from the streets, let's say. Yeah. Like where you come from with your training, you did reps, you did statics. Like, Pierre, I still remember your one-arm front lever videos, or like the front lever walk at the beach, you know, outdoor workouts, a lot of bodyweight stuff, and also Baki, yeah, a lot of handstand push-ups, like your planche stuff. And I think this is what makes you unique. For me, like, I don't know, I don't like this this word hybrid athlete anymore, because it's so much used and so hyped these days. But for me, you are really hybrid with your strength, yeah, like versatile. You have the strength in statics, you can do a really solid front lever, you can do your handstand push-ups, etc., but you can still lift super heavy weights. And tell us more about the journey. How did it transition? Pierre, I think you don't do a lot of statics these days anymore. Nope. Maybe you want to start. I still know your videos from the beach back in the days. Why don't you train at the beach anymore and do your statics there?
Yeah, so maybe the first 5 years of calisthenics for me were training outdoors every day, not even using weights, just bodyweight stuff, statics, maybe some reps. And then I started competing in weighted endurance, like we talked about 32 kilos for the pull-ups, 48 for the dips, and just do as many reps as possible. And actually, it never came to my mind to put as much weight as possible and try one rep. I never thought of it. And when they told me about this, I was like, wow, it would be fun to see, you know? And I don't know, I don't really like endurance because my mentality is not of doing lots of reps. I prefer, you know, lower rep ranges and less cardio in general. But then I started doing weighted calisthenics, through lifting. And since then, I've been purely focused on street lifting. I sometimes do some handstand push-ups and front lever work as accessory exercises, but I'm not focused anymore on this type of exercises.
But you, Baki, you still do handstand push-ups in your training, especially now for getting back to your PRs. Tell us, why do you integrate the statics? How do you integrate them?
So now I'm getting back step by step. I'm at week 4 without counting the week of coordination because I wasn't able to train as usual. But now I'm at off season, so I can still very push the statics, you know. And of course, when I will be very close to the competition, I will put a bit aside all the statics. But I still love to combine all these statics and street lifting. For me, I can see the statics as a tool to improve my numbers and prevent some injury from my joints, especially for some very specific angles. So I do like to combine those two, even that it's not very specific. I think that more tools you have in your pocket, better you can be. So this is something that I like to do. And I don't think you have just one way to work, you know, like you can work with different way and still have some very nice result.
For example, for me now, when I finish the competition, I also want to, you know, go back to a little bit of calisthenics exercises for a couple of weeks or a month or so, because I really miss it and I like doing it. I like doing handstand push-ups and trying different stuff. So I will probably also do a little bit of this after the competition, which is what I started training for, and I still love doing it. It's good, you know, to be able to do this always, and it's really good.
But you don't see it as a tool to improve your numbers.
I mean, for example, if you want to build shoulders, you can do handstand push-ups or you can do military press. I mean, it's easier to do military press because you just sit in a bench, you know, and you just focus on the shoulders. Maybe it's more efficient to do it this way rather than doing handstands, because if you're very tired from dips, it's hard to do handstands, you know, after a very heavy dip session. And it's easier to just put lower weight in a barbell and do military press. But I mean, it's also more complete to do handstands. But I mean, it really depends on how you plan your accessory exercises. If you have a very specific muscle groups, then it's maybe better to do military press. And if you just want to work in general push, it can be a good like main accessory exercise. I mean, it depends. Mm-hmm. But especially for me, I don't use it much.
Okay.
Because this is an interesting thing. You do accessory work always in the end of a workout, right? If you want to work on a specific weakness, like the triceps and during dips, or biceps during pull-ups, or like, where when you add a compound movement, like the handstand push-up, you have a lot more muscle integrated into the movement that were already stressed during the dip. So this might be one limiting factor of combining the two, right?
Yep, exactly.
I mean, if you compare a military press and a handstand push-up, you will still have the triceps, the shoulders, and same for both. So, but the intensity will be different. And if you want to load more weight, it will be easier to load more weight on the military press than with your own body weight on the handstand push-up, obviously.
You need, you need to be very, very strong on handstand pushups to be able to do, I don't know, at the end of the workout, sets of 8-12 repetitions, you know, when you are sore from the dips and from the bench or whatever. So, yeah.
But I think if you're able to pass this this little, challenge kind of, maybe can make you very, very, very strong, even more stronger. I saw this guy like doing just planche and handstand pushup, being able to weight to dips 175 or something like that.
Wow.
Maybe you saw this guy on Instagram. He's a little Asian or Malaysian, something like that.
I have no clue.
Yeah, exactly. This guy. Yeah. Son of Anmar, I think.
Yeah, Son Anmar or something. Yeah.
Okay. But for most of the people who maybe can do one handstand push-up or two reps.
Yeah.
It's not, it has no sense to add them because it's going to take that much, so much strength for them or stress that it's not optimal to add them together. Yeah. But yeah, maybe pike push-ups or something like this can be good, maybe.
But my question is, do you first get strong in statics and then you're ready to do weighted and like to do start with street lifting? And if you want to become a really hybrid functional athlete like you two, what is the way? You both before were strong in basics and in statics before you start street lifting, but I think most people today start with street lifting and don't go the long way that you both went.
Yeah, but we had a different vision back then. I wanted to just do what I saw on YouTube or stuff like that. It was pretty cool, so I was like, okay, I want to do to push up, I want to do a front lever, I want to do all of these things without thinking about, oh, I'm heavy, or it will be more longer to do it like that.
Yeah, maybe it's faster to just, you know, get more muscle mass doing street lifting and at the gym, you know, and then learn the exercises. But if you first learn the statics and then switch to street lifting, you will have a very, very big and solid base, and then you will improve faster in street lifting. So I don't know. If you want to be hybrid, maybe it makes sense to start with the basics of statics and basic of calisthenics rather than going to the gym and working for street lifting. But if you want to be good at the street lifting, I think it's way better to start with the street lifting. It's going to be more efficient and faster.
I mean, it's hard to say, but Pierre, do you think you would have even higher numbers if you would have started with street lifting right away?
Yeah, I think so. If I have started with proper programming since the beginning, like 11 years ago, I think I would be way stronger than now. But I don't complain. It's totally fine. I mean, I like that I can do handstands and front levers and everything, and I enjoyed a lot my calisthenics periods of time. So yeah, I mean, it's fine.
But with this podcast, my goal is really to show the people the way that you went, because Baki, you also talk a lot about aesthetics of the sport. Yeah. And these aesthetics might get lost if you only focus on high numbers. Yeah. We talked about this, about the evolution of the sport in general. And I know, Baki, for you, like the aesthetics, of the exercises of the, is super important and even on the same level or even higher than the numbers itself. Can you tell us about your opinion?
I mean, well, nowadays it's not really the target, but before it was very important to have a nice form and to have the numbers with it. Now it's more about the numbers, and we saw on some competitions some people being able to do like the muscle ups with their legs completely in Africa and still being reps, something that will never happen back then, like would be impossible.
Yeah.
And because this is my background, I have this deeply inside me. Sometimes I'm like, oh, how is that possible that we just came from this to this way of competing right now? But again, it is what it is. And when you have, as you said, the equipment, the sponsor, more money involved and stuff like that, the sport start to change and some stuff will, just become different.
Yeah, I don't know if you can remember, Phil, but when we had the competition in Vienna, back in 2019, I got no rep in the third muscle up with 45 kilos. And literally I moved my legs a tiny bit, and it was no rep. And now it would be a perfectly valid rep.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, you know,
every day.
Which, I mean, it's crazy to think about it.
But for me, it's not, I don't understand. Piri, you said before that the judging is getting more strict and the rules are getting, I don't understand the correlation between these two, statements.
Yeah, I think it was the previous year was not very strict. I think this year things are changing. So I think what Baki mentioned about getting less strict, it's not going in this direction, in my opinion. At least this year. You will see Baki in that.
Okay, so I hope so. But from what I experienced, it was still not really, it was not that strict. I mean, it was really strict with some people. Like the top athletes, for example, they will always be judged as crazy. And for some other people, they were just like, it was just normal for them to be some massive mistakes. And I saw also some weird things as people being able to put their sleeves with people helping them while it was in the rules that they were not allowed to do it. So for me, this is not really as strict as we want.
But this year at least, I went in the German Open to classify. And things have changed a lot. I mean, the judging was very strict. I got no rep in the third muscle up and no rep in the third pull up. And it was super, super small detail, but they saw it and they gave me no rep, which is very good that the judges give no reps, even if the for crazy lifts, which is very good. And also in the backstage, there were, I think, two guys watching that people would not help to put the sleeves.
Okay, you know? Nice. Really
so,
nice.
Yeah,
okay.
I think this year they have improved this a lot and I think they will improve it more. So yeah, last year was not that strict, so that I get what you are a little bit, sad about it. But this year is going to be, I think we're going to see a lot of red lights in the competition.
Okay, nice.
We'll see.
Hopefully not for me.
Nice. So we talked already about the correlation between for example, handstand push-up being for you, Baki, a good tool to improve the dips and to have this shoulder or like even 90 degrees for all shoulder angles for a nice, strong, healthy shoulder. My question would be for you to say, do you think if someone practices street lifting, will he get stronger in statics? Is the strength transfer direct or is it too far away? And other way around as well, like... Baki, you have the statics in your training, and I'm asking myself if I only train as you said, like the Son Hanma. Yeah, let's take him as an example. Super strong athlete, planche athlete, etc. Then he tries weighted dips, and he does 140. I don't know what the numbers was, even higher, but super strong athlete.
I even have the example of Andre Strong. He's a calisthenics athlete, static athlete, but he's able to do some very crazy muscle ups, dips, and pull ups, and his basic training is planche and front lever. So for sure, you have a very nice transfer between both. Yeah, definitively.
Yeah. I agree more in specificity. Like, if you want to get good at something, you need to train for it. But I mean, also if you have been training planche and handstand pushups, trying a DPR, it's very dangerous because it's not, it's not the same movement and you need to get adapted to it. So I guess that if you do it smart and slowly build up and with good progressions, it's fine. But I don't encourage anyone to just try a DPR without properly training dips at least for some time. If you come from statics, because you can get injured very easily. So I think that you need to still work the other if you want to be good at it. Maybe if you want to be good at weighted, you even if you do statics, you need to do some work of the weighted exercises you want to improve and the other way around too. If you want to go for statics, if you do only street lifting, you need to add the static exercises at some point because otherwise you will not improve in them.
Sorry, the question was about a transfer or about just if you... Okay, because if it's about transfer, you definitely, you don't really have to train street lifting and you can just do statics and you will be able to do some nice street lifting without having it like specifically on the side. And it will not be as dangerous because I think the static is way more dangerous, by the way, than street lifting. The angle and the joint is insane. And the pressure on the tendons are, for me, way, 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 way like, massive than on street lifting.
But for example, if someone who only do planches and handstand pushups, even if with weights, if that same person goes for a dip and dips 150 kilos, the pressure on the joints and the extension and everything is going to be way, way, way higher than any handstand push-up or any planche that he can do. That's why I said that it's good that that person adapts to, you know, some dips before trying.
I think like both positions are true to some point, because definitely we see a lot of statics athletes who are who have like super strong joints and tendons due to the static training, and for them it's like quite easy to, it feels like it's quite easy to transfer to street lifting. But true, like a specific exercise like a dip is still bringing a lot of injury potential or something to someone who is not used to it 100%. But we've seen like I think really it's, in my opinion, I don't know, like for me, real street lifting, real street workout is what you guys do, because yeah, like if I would have to define strong, I would name you two, because you're like you're like quite heavyweight, so it's also like moving more weight is quite easy. You have the aesthetic skills to do stuff, and like the combining aesthetics and street lifting is something that is really should be more popular, in my opinion. We just had a meetup last week with Simon Imhäuser from Sweden, and like for him, he trains it other way around than maybe Baki or like Jupera, that he started with statics and like more like freestyle and statics, and then he adds street lifting to for his progress, and for him it's just enjoyable and nice for the pump and the progress to do weights. And his numbers shocked everyone. Yeah. Like, when he was doing his weighted dips and did 11 reps with dead stop, for 100 kg, everyone was like, you know, oh, damn.
Crazy.
And, Baki were also a little bit surprised on this day. So,
yeah, honestly, it was really strong.
We took you in your preparation, and you thought it would be a chill meetup that we will do, and then we were putting you into such a chill.
Yeah. But it was nice.
Yeah.
So maybe you propose that in the street lifting competition, everyone should be able to do handstand push-ups and front lever as a level entry, you know? So if you cannot do the handstand push-up, you cannot compete.
To be honest, it would be cool, because it's the same thing for me. Why is there a muscle up in the competition? Because this is the deciding factor for me between powerlifting and street lifting. And for me, this like the front lever or some like the front lever or the planche is a little bit extreme, but let's say the front lever is really on the same level. If someone can do a 100 kg pull-up but can't hold a front lever, for me that's not hybrid, that's not functional. That's just my opinion, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, they are not aiming for that now. They are just aiming for the big numbers in street lifting, let's say. Yeah. So yeah. Right now it's no sense. What I'm doing and what he did and enjoy doing in the off season, it's something very personal, I think. Now it's not really, you can't really put that on the table. And he switched it so much, the sport switched it so much that you can't really put it back and change the rules and add some, even the muscle ups, as you said, is the number one movement normally that defines the sports. And this is the one with the low, how would say that?
The lowest like, points, the lowest.
Impact. Yeah, the lowest points. So it's,
That's a big topic to talk about.
That's already big topic, but we can go for it.
We can go for it. Okay. Go for it.
What do you think? You think normally, I think before I was against, I was like, okay, you need to be hybrid and be able to lift, to have a big squat, a big pull-ups, etc. But now I think that you should have a coefficient on the muscle-ups, to be honest, because it's not normal that people come and are able to lift just 10 kg and win with 300 squats. I mean,
yeah, or even more extreme in the plus 94 categories, they are just muscle upping 2 kilos, 5 kilos, and getting 300 kilo squats, you know? And I don't know how this is way closer to a powerlifting competition than a streetlifting competition.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I've thought a lot about it, and I've always thought that there should be a coefficient, but I also understand that it's way, way easier for everyone to understand the sport if there is no coefficient, because you just sum the weights and that's it. You know, it's very easy. And yeah, I don't know how much harder would it be to have a coefficient. Maybe if it's a round number like 2 or 3, you know, it's easier to implement. But then, you know, also the totals would change a lot, because now, I don't know, my total instead of 550 would be 600 and something, you know. So, you know, I don't know if this will ever happen, because it's too easy to make it just the sum of everything. But I think there should be a coefficient too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is our movement. The muscle up is what defines the sports. If you get rid of the muscle ups, it's just a powerlifting competition with pull ups.
Yep, exactly. And also, if you look at some stats, for generally everyone, the squat it's worth about half of the points of the entire competition. For some people, even more. For me, which I think is the most extreme case, it's only worth around 40%. Which is still a lot, because it's more than a third. You know, if you looked like lower body push and pull, if you separated these three movements, you know, or patterns, the lower body should be 33%. And even me, that I'm the most extreme of everyone, it's 40%. And for some people, it's 50 or even 60% in some cases, which is crazy to think about it. But yeah, because there's an argument that I discussed with the final rep organizers, and that they told me that you have 2 exercises for pull. So you would have to sum the pull-ups and the muscle-ups as 1 exercise, for example. And then you have the dips, and then you have the squat. So if you take it like this, it's, you know, like 50% for the squat, 25% for the dip, and 25% for the pull-up plus muscle-up. But in many cases, this is not what happens. For example, in the higher weight categories, maybe it's like 15% for the pull. And I don't know, 30% for the dip and 60 for the squat, or what was missing for 100%. But yeah, I don't know. For me, it's kind of sad. I think there should be a coefficient.
Yeah, most of people know that the points are taken from the push.
If you want to be good at thruster lifting, just train big squat and dip and just manage to do a muscle up. I mean, that's it. Yeah.
Actually, right now, this is it, yeah.
There are a lot of strong athletes that don't come from powerlifting, and they're not competing because some athletes come from powerlifting or more like strength sports, and they can get a higher level more easy, because if you manage to squat 200 and something and get a 100 plus kilogram dip, you are like very close to be classified in the big competitions already without having to do, I don't know, 40 kilo muscle ups or 100 kilo pull ups, you know? So yeah, I don't know.
It's crazy to think about that, because we can't do the same all around. Like a straight lifter can't go in the powerlifting competition and just become a top athlete because of his muscle up and his pull-ups. But in powerlifting, they can just come because they have big squat and nice dips because they are benching, and boom, they become top athletes. So it's insane.
Yeah, but this is going to be very hard to change, I think. Also because the organizers of Final Rep are more like in the higher weight categories. Who are benefited from the no coefficient. So, yeah. I don't know. Especially in the lower weight categories, it's more equivalent, the upper and the lower body. But if you go to the higher weights, you just need to be good at squats, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I see. It's a topic that we're all thinking of a lot of times, and but let's come back to the original topic, that like static and street lifting combination. Baki, for me it's super interesting that you are now starting back your, let's say, first block, or like back your preparation. How do you currently train? Because it might be super interesting for someone who is now starting with street lifting, or like who did a lot of statics and has a good foundation. How do you currently go back into your training? And
So now I put something that I never did before, because it's off season and I have plenty of time to become stronger. So I'm just like trying some new things. I'm training as a bodybuilder kind of now, and doing a lot of accessories as bodybuilding.
Very good, like me.
Yeah, exactly, to have a big chest like you, because I can see your chest is like that, but mine is flat, so I need to have more.
Stop copying me, man.
But I'm putting a lot more of bodybuilding hypertrophy accessories, and doing my static still at the end or at the beginning, but just one, for example, because I still like it and this off season. And yeah, so that's it. A lot of volume, a lot of accessories to become very strong, have a good foundation, good volume, and be able to smash these numbers with some nice equipment and elbow sleeves.
Is that the reason why you are at 103 kilograms body weight?
Yeah, so I hate this body weight, to be honest. This is not my normally my typical body weight, but I think now more than ever is the time for me to build some very huge foundation, especially with the squat, especially with the room of improvement that I have. So I will stay very heavy, try to catch my numbers of 194 category. I will try to catch my lightweight numbers while being heavy on the pulls and still being able to push.
It's going to be hard for the muscle up when you are so heavy.
I think I'm still pretty decent, even now. Yeah.
Yeah, if you can get 40 kilos at this body weight, it's going to be crazy.
To be honest, I think I can.
Well,
so we'll see.
Didn't you also plan, or am I correct, incorrect, to change your form during the muscle up? You had to...
Oh yeah, so because I was very, I'm very stubborn, and I'm from the original calisthenics background, so I was putting the plates between my legs, and I was, you know, but now I don't care. I will come with Power Rangers, elbow sleeves, knee sleeves, everything, put the plate in front of me. I don't care.
That's crazy.
I don't care.
I mean, bring the plate in front or between, I mean, that's not a big deal. I mean, it's just, I mean.
Oh, come on. Please don't say it's not a big deal. It's a huge big deal. You have a better momentum. You have the little abs of your hip doing this little hinge, and it's way easier to lift the weight. I mean, I was doing this with kettlebell back then.
Oh, and add, hard.
But no, I mean, you have to put it in front when you have the kettlebell.
Yeah, but
that's
it's
what I mean.
To, yeah, balance the kettlebell, yeah.
And I was already doing the sets with 32 kg. It was way easier. And then we switched it because we wanted more difficulties, you know?
So, really? You switched it to make it harder?
Yeah. This is what we, that's why.
Because of the aesthetics.
And because of the, as well. When we had plates, we just wanted to make it more aesthetic and more difficult. I mean, it's way easier. It's way easier. That's why everyone is doing it with the plate in front.
Obviously, it's easier. Otherwise, I would be doing in between.
Thank you. I mean, I was scared that you will say
no. I mean, I'm not going to argue with that. I recommend everyone to put the plates in front, especially because it's easier to use all the leverage from the legs and everything. Because in between, you need to squeeze the plates very, very hard to get the same leverage, which is very hard because, you know, our calves are not that big to smash all the plates.
especially
when you put...
Especially our legs.
Yeah,
our
especially
calves,
my legs. But, yeah. Also, it's easier to do a better technique with the plates in front, in my opinion, because with the plates in between, usually there's more keep because it's harder to control, and also to get off the box, I think having the plate in front, it's easier. I mean, because in between you need to like do a little bit of a jump, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm happy that you are putting the plates in front like me.
But I don't have the choice.
You can do it the other way around. Just make it.
No, I mean. It's not really smart to do that now. If you want to compete, you have to have the same weapon as everyone. So, you know, even what I did before wasn't smart. I didn't use the big and elbow sleeves, the things like that. It was not really smart.
Yeah.
You have to adapt. Sorry.
Yeah. Of course. Also the chain, you know, transitioning from the chain from the belt, an iron chain to a deep belt rope. I mean, it was game changer for me. It was crazy. Yeah, being able to put the plates lower and everything. Wow, it's been amazing. Yeah.
So, yeah, just as a small challenge for this podcast, you can try the 60 kg on Saturday with the plates in between, just here as a small...
Oh, yeah, just to demonstrate, Baki, that it's easier. No way.
You think you will put how much, by the way? Just simple question after
this,
the box.
This will be published after the competition, yeah? So
Oh, really? That is perfect.
No, so I can talk freely, right?
Yeah, this is private now.
That's quite a hard question because the last 2 weeks of picking for the pull exercises, so muscle up and pull up, have not been very good. For example, the last week I managed to do 50 kilos two times, two single reps, but you know, I was not feeling especially good. So I'm not sure of how much would I put. For example, a month ago for the muscle up, I did the 55 kilos in training with a little bit of chicken wing, but I'm sure that I could have gotten it in a competition, like 55 or 56, but maybe, I don't know. The way I felt these last 2 weeks, didn't give me much confidence, but hopefully between 52 and 55 should be possible. I hope I can get more than the previous year. And yeah, we'll see. But yeah, these last trainings have not been very good in pull. In push, yes, but not in pull. But yeah, we'll see in the competition.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super, super nice. And when this podcast will be published, people will already know the results. You know, they will have all the numbers.
Now I will miss my opener with 45, you know, and I will be crying.
Nah, no.
Won't happen.
It won't happen.
Nice. Yeah, we had one interesting question from the community who answered on Instagram. He was asking, how does it make sense to train front lever and weighted pull-ups in the same session if you're like working at 80 to 90% effort for both? What do you think about this, Baki?
So again, depends what you are aiming for. Me, I'm still in my head, I'm still in the in the old way to do things, you know, old-fashioned way. So I still like to use it as a core exercises, even if it's not the best for it. Normally it would be way better and more efficient to use something else, but I'm training. This is not for everyone. So to reply to the question, no, for a beginner or for an intermediate, we'll say that are aiming for straight lifting only. But for me that want to still be able to do front lever and some push up, etc. Yes, it makes sense.
My opinion would be that for me, I see more of an accessory exercise is the front lever, for example. I think it's going to be more helpful for the muscle up than for the pull up. I think it's more similar movement, but if you can do the front lever, you can add it. If it's after the pulls, I think there's not a problem to add it as an accessory exercise. It would be maybe the same as adding a pullover, you know, with a cable machine, something very similar. So, if you can do it, you can add it. But you will need to take into account the extra fatigue that you will have, obviously. But yeah, for me, I think it would be a good option to add both in the same session.
As we talked already, you have multiple strengths. And I think the temptation in calisthenics, it's like a video game. You want to master everything. You know, there are so many possibilities that you have. And someone was asking, does it make sense to train twice per day? Yeah. So, let me know your opinion. You know, people in especially younger people, they are often like, they want to push, you know, they are like young, full of energy, and they are not really, what's the word? They can't wait. You know, they are impatient. That's it.
I've been there. I tried and I get injured very easily. So I don't think this is the best way to do it. And you can still do it if you know how to manage the volume and the intensity, but this is not the best way. You have to take into accountability the recovery. So for sure, twice per day is, and again, twice per day doing what? If this is a cardio session in the morning and then the strength training in the evening, okay, why not? But if this is two sessions of strength lifting, I don't think this is really efficient.
Yeah, there's an example of, for example, in weightlifting, especially in the Chinese weightlifting or Bulgarian weightlifting, they do train twice per day. And I think they do like 10 to 14 sessions per week of training. So it's like two sessions a day, maybe even some days three sessions, which is crazy. But we need to understand that they live for and from that. And they spend all their energy on this, and they have physiotherapists and, there's also lots of scandals about doping in these sports, in the elite levels and everything. So I don't think it's something possible for us mortals to do, to train twice a day. I think the recovery, it's as important as the workout. And if you cannot dissipate the fatigue you get from the workouts, you will not evolve. You will always be, you know, too much fatigued for the workouts, and you will not progress. So yeah, no way to work out twice a day, especially in a street lifting.
Yeah, and it's important to take into accountability, like what is your situation? If you are like a full-time athlete, let's say, and you, as you said, like you have resources to do physiotherapy and like this is really your main goal, then how you spend the day. Yeah, you can train differently than a person who has a 40-hour work week and.
But even for me, that I have for this preparation, I have had lots of time for street lifting, and I've been going to the physiotherapist at some point once every 2 weeks. I mean, there's no way of training more than once per day. I mean, impossible for me. For example, 5 sessions a week, it's good, and even I've had light sessions in the week, so not all the sessions are super hard. But for me, I mean, there's no way to train twice per day. I mean, it's impossible. Even with all the time in the world and physiotherapists and recovery and everything, I mean, there's no way. If you look at powerlifting, I think I don't know any powerlifter who trains twice a day.
Yeah.
But Bak, you have been adding cardio in the past. I don't know if you do it now with 103 kg, but in the past, I still remember your stories and stuff. You've done cardio.
Cardio is different, you know?
Yeah, it's way different. And as I said, this is a very low intensity cardio. So, of course, if I do that, I can put it on the same day, but it will still be with a time between the two. But no, it's no way that I will train twice per day. But right now, it's no way.
Yeah.
So to maybe summarize this whole thing of I want to achieve everything. I want to be strong in statics and street lifting. I want to progress as fast as possible. To summarize, Pierre, you said even you as a really someone who dedicates a lot of time and resources into the sport, you train 5 times per week. Maybe let's formulate the optimal thing. Yeah, 5 times training per week. You can use Baki statics as an accessory work in the end of the workout if you are quite progressed, like quite far in the statics. But otherwise, you could use pike pushups instead of a military press for a healthy and strong shoulder. What else do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a pretty good summary. If you've been going to be good at something, you need to train the thing. You know, you can't expect to just do other stuff and then just try and be good at it. So, I don't know. For example, Baki and I are very special cases because we've been very good at statics for lots of time. And now we're also doing street lifting. So we can be more or less average on statics and good at the street lifting, you know. But if you want to be the best at statics and the best at the street lifting, it's impossible, you know? I mean, you can have kind of an okay level for statics and be good at the street lifting, or you can have a very good level of statics and be okay at the street lifting, but, you know, not having the best level for, you know, both sports, I would say.
And the thing you want to become the best in, you prioritize, you put in the training first, right?
Yeah of course.
Definitely.
Yeah. Accessory exercises. Baki, I remember our trainings in Spenge last year, and you told me that you know that your lower back is one weak link of your body.
Yeah. The big weaknesses.
This is where you add in accessory exercises from bodybuilding, from wherever, to fix single bottlenecks, single weak links.
Yeah, I mean, you have to target not just that, but you have to target your weakness and work on it. For example, for me, my lower back is a big weakness, so I have to target this part of me and just try to be stronger and to have more resiliency on this specific part to be able to lift to support my lift, my entire lift. But you can also work with the accessories to make you stronger with your strong lift. This is also something very important. It's not just for the weaknesses that you have. It's also for the strong part that you already have.
Like you can also work the quads, for example, even if it's not a weak part for you.
Yeah.
You can get more muscle mass in the quads. Because, for example, doing squats, especially the lower back, obviously you work the lower back, but maybe you don't work it enough. So that's why you need to add some back extensions or from some kind of deadlifts or whatever to just work it more for more hypertrophy or Yeah, build some muscle mass.
I know that you, Pere, have a coach, right? You are getting being coached, and Baki, you do your programming yourself for your competitions. Pere, maybe you want to start. What led you to say, I need help, I need someone who looks from it from the outside, and I will not do it myself?
Yeah, the problem when I coached myself is that I needed that perspective from the outside, someone to put the brakes for me, because sometimes I tend to push it too far. And, you know, if I have someone taking care and of me, they will program a deload before I even realize that it's too late, you know, and I've been too fatigued. So for me, it's a way of, you know, having someone looking at you from the outside and with a bigger plan in mind, maybe. And I like that. If I were to do it myself, I think I would push myself too hard, and I would get more injuries. And that's why I have a coach.
Okay. You have a coach.
First of all, because beside the squat, all my numbers increased. So I think I have a very, not unique, but I know myself and I know from my mistakes, and I don't push it too far. I try to manage my training and to see all the little case that can make me overtrain or something like that. But my big mistakes is the squat, and my big weaknesses is the squat. And I had a coach for that, to be honest, 2 times. But nothing happened from it. I mean, I had 250 3 years ago, and last year I squatted 250, 2.5. So with a coach, with a powerlifting coach. So that's why now I'm pretty, I don't know, I think I will do better alone, because I know myself. It's not that I don't trust someone, but I didn't find this person, so I like to do it individually now.
So if you want to apply to become Baki's coach, you can fill out the form below.
I get your point. I get Baki's point, because when you have to look for a coach, it's very hard at the beginning because you don't know each other. So you need to get that link, that confidence, you know, of getting to know each other. And once you have been for a very long time with a coach, then it's way better, because he knows what you need, he or she knows what you need, and how you will feel, how the picking will go for you, how to do a proper tapering and everything. So yeah, starting with a new coach, it's very hard, you know? And I get why Baki is kind of skeptical about the coach, because I don't know, maybe a coach doesn't know what he needs right now, and maybe he knows himself the best. And for example, for me, I've been with my coach for 2 years now, and especially in this preparation, we added many things, and I think he knows me pretty well at this point. So yeah, but you know, it's a very long period of time of trust and talking a lot and all this.
Yeah, I would love to have a coach, to be honest, because this is a mental thing that you have all the time, that you need to plan, you need to see if what you did before was nice, or if you're, you know, and stick to the plan all the time, etc. But again, I didn't find this person yet, and I don't think I will, to be honest. No. It's pretty difficult for me. And again, my numbers increased every year beside the squat, so I will study my squat. I will do everything that's needed to, and let's see if I need a coach or not.
Oh, interesting.
Where I see the similarity between you two is that you both have a good self-awareness. Yeah. Like Pere, you said, you know, your weakness of running into overtraining, pushing too much. And Baki, you know that you have the self-awareness to be able to plan for yourself really well. So I think a lot in our sport and the life of an athlete is about having a really good feeling of your body and knowing yourself, your mentality, and your physique the best. And this is maybe something that some people lack, is something that develops with time, knowing yourself better, right?
Yeah, it's a marathon.
Yep, it's a marathon.
How did you get there? Was there something that it just comes with time, or is there anything that you can give as advice for someone who needs to know himself better?
Me, I did a lot of mistakes. I overtrained. I trained twice per day. I tried so many different things. So that's why now I know myself a bit, I think so. And yeah, I'm able to see from, to introspect and see what I like, what I can do to improve and to change it if it's not good. But also stay on the same path and be patient, because sometimes we want to change everything when one thing is not working directly, but we just need to be just more patient, just one or two more weeks to see the differences. So yeah, I just did a lot of mistakes and I learned from it. That's it.
Yeah, I think we both made a lot of mistakes, had a lot of injuries, and you learn from it. Yeah. Maybe, yeah, for sure it's not the most efficient way to do it. You know, taking 10 years or more. But yeah, I guess that if I were to be a beginner again, you know, maybe I would try to look for a good coach and get a good relation. And just, I think it would be faster to improve, especially with all the knowledge and all the injuries I would have avoided, you know, in my entire life. But yeah, back then there were no coaches. So.
Okay, cool. Nice. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, I still have some rapid fire random questions from the community that I thought were interesting. First question, are hollow body pull-ups good for strength?
Hollow body pull-ups?
What's that?
Sam, I'm searching with
hollow body pull-ups. What?
Yeah. Like, it's the front lever pull-ups or?
Yeah, like.
No, I don't think so. okay, I thought you can explain to me what this is, but I thought it's about an arched back, you know, like not pulling like straight up, but like you see these people who are like activating and almost like pulling with super arched and how's it called?
Oh, so this is arch pull-ups.
Yeah, the arched pull-ups.
Good. Okay. Then let's call it our arch body, arch pull-ups, good for strength.
I would say it's a nice activation. It's really nice as a warm-up. Really good. Yeah.
But for strength, know, I wouldn't call it for strength. I would call it for activation and for technique work. Yeah.
Okay. How do you make a career in calisthenics? The person was saying, how does he make a living, make a career in calisthenics?
So, me personally, I'm a personal trainer, so I didn't make like a career in calisthenics. This is not my main job. This is more like a passion. And because I won some world championships and competition on the side, but I do have a Garnison as a sponsor and some other stuff. But yeah, it's not really a career because this is not like we still don't have a federation or stuff like that. So you can't be like a professional athlete and all the things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. I also think it's hard. Like if you want to make a living out of calisthenics, or you are among the best of the world, or you have very good marketing or something, because it's very hard. You need to get sponsors and then you need to be known as a very good coach, for example, or be very good at the sport. That usually people think, oh, he's very good, so he's a good coach, which is a common misconception, no? And but yeah, you need to get known the sport, and especially in social media. Otherwise, there are no sponsors, and there's no, yeah, you will not have clients for coaching, for example.
Then a question mostly to Baki, but to both of you: are you good cooks?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at cooking. I always cook at my place.
No, I will not define me as a good cooker. I will define me as a good eater.
Okay.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, these were the three random questions. So, yeah, thank you both very much for taking the time for sharing some of your, of your period right now. I think we might do this... like this talk, maybe in 1 year again, then Baki, you will be in a completely different situation. You will also have the chest of Pir again, hopefully. But in general, just big thank you for sharing some of your insights of what's currently happening. Pir, it has been, I guess, a few really intense weeks and months before. And I wish you all the best for the competition. And Baki,
thank you.
Yeah, good comeback, good trainings. You also document thank everything you. On YouTube, every like training right now or a few yeah. trainings per week. So if someone wants to see, even though it's in French, it's really interesting to see. So big thank you to both of you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks.
So yeah,
pleasure.
Then let's wrap it up. You can say goodbye to the community. Baki, you can start, and thanks again for your time.
Okay, well, it was a real pleasure to be with these two and share some of my current situation and knowledge. While English is pretty hard for me, so sorry for my mistakes, but I tried my best. And see you soon.
Yeah, thanks very much everyone for watching. It's always nice to talk to Baki and Phil. And I don't know, I've had a great time, and hopefully we can talk more in the future. Thanks for watching.
Nice. Ben, thanks again. And talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone, for watching the podcast until the end. Your support means a lot to us. If you have a duo that you want to see or some questions for a new podcast episode, put them in the comments down below and maybe we can make it happen. Thanks a lot for your support. Give this episode a thumbs up if you liked it. Thanks for watching until the end and see you in the next one.